The libertarian philosophy has garnered a lot of attention lately. Many Americans who joined the Tea Party movements call themselves libertarian, as I do. President Obama's big government agenda, from health care to food safety, has a lot of people asking, is there another way? Many feel the answer lies with freedom, with libertarians. Tonight, we'll explore where these principles fit in today's economic, social, and political climate. With us this evening are three stalwarts of the libertarian movement, Reason Magazine and Reason TV's Nick Gillespie, Catherine Mangu Ward, and Matt Welsh. Guys, welcome here. Matt, we'll start with you. What does the word libertarian mean? What is libertarianism?
Everyone has a different definition of it. What I use for myself, it's the basic instinct, and it's an American Enlightenment instinct, is that basically, as Henry David Thoreau said, that which governs least governs best. That Americans, other people, human beings, left to their own devices, if they're going to be engaged in peaceable transactions, will create their own life and liberty and pursuit of happiness as they see fit, using markets, using free exchange, and in the absence of sort of government smothering of that, will create enough prosperity and a more interesting life than the opposite, which is government control.
Nick, is the Tea Party movement libertarian, or is it something different?
I think that there's an impulse in the Tea Party that is libertarian. They're anti-authority. They're anti being told and lied to, okay, this is what you got to do. We're going to spend your money better for you. They're sick of that. I don't think that the Tea Party is what Walt Whitman would have called a barbaric yawp. I mean, it's
barbaric yawp.
It's a good thing. It's just a big, great kind of scream and moan and gesture. What the Tea Party does, I think the Tea Party is semi-libertarian. Libertarianism will give it an agenda and a policy direction.
Why do we hear this yawp? And I'm not going to ask you necessarily to accept Gillespie's word, but why did we hear this groan now? I mean, George Bush was a big government Republican. The Republicans took over the Department of Education. They federalized education. They gave us the Patriot Act. They spent this into oblivion. But now, with a liberal Democrat, some would say a socialist in the White House, out of nowhere comes the Tea Party. Are they libertarians? Or is this yawp just a reaction to Barack Obama?
You know, I'm going to get on board with Nick's yawp and say that, you know, they can't be predicted. People just have these kind of upwellings of anger, and this is what we're seeing is one of them. I think it's great that the form that this particular yawp has taken, this particular moment of populist anger, is a quasi-libertarian one.
If I could just say that the Tea Party, you know, there was that summer of anger, but it's also, you know, a couple of years ago, but it's also TARP, which was a Bush program.
Which
and Hank Paulson, that's what lit the fuse here, man, because it was like, you know, after 8 years of Bush, you know, just being a terrible big government disaster, there it is. Okay, now we're going to bail out the wealthiest people in America.
All right, some of the Tea Party folks are not yet in the government, Matt, because they were just elected last November and they'll be sworn in next month. Some of them already are. We learned the other day that the Tea Party folks that are already in government have themselves already asked for billions in earmarks. Are these people for real?
That's the question.
What do you think?
I think the bigger question, not are they real? They will be corrupted by Washington. Unfortunately, that's how the system works. But are the people who got them into office, are they for real? Those are people who profess to be feel bad about the fact that they didn't give Bush a harder time and that they're going to be there in primaries against people who sell out their interests on Capitol Hill. So will they go against their own people that they elected? That's the question.
A lot of libertarians think that the phrase conservative Republican lost whatever meaning it had in the Bush years because he claimed to be a conservative Republican, but governed as a rhino, as a Republican in name only. Are the Tea Party people for real? Has the Republican Party learned its lesson? Or, as Welsh said, will they be corrupted by Potomac fever, which is that the government can do whatever it wants?
You know, libertarians learned a long time ago not to think that Republicans are on their side. When Republicans get power, they immediately stop talking the talk. And as much as we'd like to see them stick to some principles, and I think the fact that there are these Tea Party people should give a little extra heft to it. It's probably not going to be enough. When Republicans are
power, they want more. Why is the Republican Party the natural home, if there is a natural home for libertarians? I don't know of any libertarians that are Democrats.
We are as homeless as the people out on the streets, Judge, you know, in terms of political party. What was true is that at least since Barry Goldwater, the Republican Party has had a small government, a very libertarian rhetoric. It has never been matched. It wasn't matched by Ronald Reagan, and it certainly wasn't matched by George W. Bush. I think, you know, when you look at the people who are in Congress, like John Boehner and Michelle Bachmann, for instance, no way they're libertarian, no way they're Tea Parties. They voted a lot of, you know, Boehner is behind virtually every big government expansion
well,
that Bush did.
Use Ron Paul as the standard. Yeah. I don't think anybody, Connie Mack comes close on a few people.
Ron Paul is good. Will Rand Paul, I think he'll be good at least for a few years. I think Mike Lee of Utah and I think Marco Rubio, these are people who could turn the tide. But Jeff Matt is right. Matt is right that it's the voters. These people are empty vessels. They need to speak for the people. And as long as the people are speaking the right message.
I have been to a lot of these Tea Party gatherings. I think the three of you have as well. At some of them I've spoken. At some of them I've been down with the folks. There is serious devotion to the Constitution. You don't know how many of these, this little copy of the Constitution, I saw ordinary folks, not lawyers, not legal scholars, carrying around with them. If the Tea Party's folks in the Republican Party in the Congress are not faithful to the Constitution, will they sign the death knells of their own political careers?
I think so. I think what we have right now, the American politics swings like a fast pendulum right now. And anytime an important American tradition of politics is consistently flouted over time, then you have an online rebellion in the works. And that's going to happen, I think, here.
Catherine, why are you a libertarian?
You know, I actually wish that everybody who carried those constitutions in their pockets really was a libertarian. Unfortunately, you see those things brandished on the floor of the House all the time to no avail. I'm a libertarian because I read a book, Judge. It happens to a lot of people. You read a little Ayn Rand, you read a little Hayek, whatever it is, and you discover either that you were a libertarian all along or you become one. And I think that's one thing that makes libertarians unique and special is that a lot of people do come to the philosophy by reading a book. Tea Party people are on the flip side of that coin, though. There are people who just have this gut feeling they want to be left alone, and we want them in our coalition, too.
Agree or disagree, the individual is greater than the state.
The state is a function of the individual, or should
agree or disagree?
Definitionally.
All right, no problem with that.
You're not going to get any debate here, Jerry.
All right, the thorny and complex issue of libertarians and war. That's next. Here's something the far left and libertarians frequently have in common. In most cases, both would move immediately to end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But from a libertarian perspective, is war ever justified? Our libertarian all-star panel is still with us. Nick Gillespie, Catherine Mangu Ward, and Matt Welsh. Nick, to you first. When is war to libertarians justified?
I think
morally, legally, constitutionally.
You know, war and violence is justified in the act of self-defense. And I think, you know, as a nation, we have a right to defend ourselves and our interests and our property. And as people, we do as well. We should not be initiating force, but we should be absolutely empowered to respond with proper commensurate force.
Isn't that the argument that George W. Bush made when he invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, Welsh?
Actually not. He went further than that. He wanted to create new places.
I'm trying to taunt and torment the big whack over here. Go ahead.
But it is true. War is the ultimate failure of the state. It's the health and the death of the state in many ways.
What do you mean by health and what do you mean by death?
By health, war is such a terrible centralizing exercise. It always requires more money from individuals, less freedom from individuals, and it kills people. It is the absolute failure of public policy, but any government that is waging war accrues power. That is the definition of it.
Because in wartime, we are afraid, and we realize we need the government, and so we will give up our liberties and give up our wealth and entrust it to the government. Except when the war is over, we don't always get those liberties or that wealth back, right?
That's right. And, you know, I think people who are anxious to go to war, you know, the various reasons present themselves. They sound good. It's always worth keeping in mind the government is not very good at most of what it does. And war is going to be no exception there.
What would you say about the argument that if we know the bad guys are coming here, it's better to fight them in, I'll use a phrase that was common right after 9/11, in Baghdad as opposed to Baltimore?
Right. Well, you know, part of the problem with that is, like, think about it on the local police level. We know who the bad guys are, so why don't we just pick them up and execute them before they commit any crimes? We know there's going to be a huge amount of mistakes there, a huge expense, and it's not going to work anyway. Preemptive war, which is what the Bush campaign used, or the Bush administration used to go into Iraq especially, I think that the U.S. had a right, after it asked the Taliban in Afghanistan, turn over bin Laden, help cooperate with us, and they said no. we had a right to go in there. I don't think we have a right to stay there without any mission and without any purpose and waste American lives.
The authorization to use military force, which is the name of the statute enacted by the Congress shortly after 9/11, which basically said to President Bush and all of his successors, you can go after anybody you want. That wasn't a declaration of war. That was the most open-ended thing there is. Is that moral? Is that constitutional?
No. I mean, you should go to the Congress to get a declaration of war, period.
And whom would you declare war in the post-9/11 era? A country that harbored the terrorists?
In that case, yes. If you made, as Nick said, they made a specific request. But that 914 authorization is this terrible, open-ended thing that allows not just the prosecution of war and executions, assassinations, at this point, of American citizens. It's really gone beyond the pale.
The North Koreans, not too long ago, in a manner that I don't know if it was provoked or unprovoked, they fired artillery at an island that was part of South Korea, and they killed innocent civilians. This was an act of war. Should the United States be involved in defending South Korea, bearing in mind that we have spent over $1 trillion since 1948 to keep between 25 and 35,000 active duty troops in South Korea?
I think this is a great argument for why we probably shouldn't have blocks of 25 and 35,000 active duty troops all over the world. The same is true in Germany, same is true in a lot of other places. Once we're entangled somewhere, we do have commitments. We make these commitments and we got to stick to them. But why are we there in the first place? Why was that our problem?
Well, can any argument be made that it is in our own national interest? John Bolton sat right where you sit, and you can sitting now. You can imagine his argument. But can you accept any argument that it's in America's national security interest? Los Angeles and Honolulu will be safer if we have 30,000 troops in South Korea.
Sure, you can always make those arguments. But again, I think we get back to the idea of Republicans sounding good before they're in power and then sounding awful once they're there. When Bush came into office, he had a very modest foreign policy, didn't want to do nation building. Once he had the power, he took
it. Let's talk about an effect, too,
is
that when we take responsibility for the world's foreign policy and interventionism, the rest of the world stops being responsible. South Korea should defend itself at this point. It's a prosperous country. There's no reason why it can't defend itself against a tin-pot communist country at this point.
We presently have over 250,000 troops at over 900 installations around the world, some so super secret that even the Defense Department doesn't know about them. Is that a republic or an empire, Matt?
It's an empire. It is. We are the hegemon. We say that we take collective
responsibility. You've got to define for Nick what the word hegemon
is. He's the degree
holder. Isn't that
here.
Cartoon show from Japan?
Yeah.
Not bad. Not bad. All right. Trampling rights one day at a time. The path to tyranny is lined with the graves of every single natural right. The guarantees of the Constitution versus today's big government. Next. The Bill of Rights is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. It enumerates rights of the people that the government is not permitted to trample upon. Yet we see the violations of these rights every day, from the TSA gropers at the airport to members of Congress calling for the prosecution of newspapers for printing secret government documents revealed by WikiLeaks. Does the Constitution still trump big government? Back with Nick Gillespie, Catherine Mangu Ward, and Matt Welsh. Nicholas, to you first. Suppose in some bizarre and weird political environment, the Constitution were amended to repeal the First Amendment.
Right.
Would you still have freedom of each?
Yes, you would.
What would be the source of that?
The reason, the source of that, natural rights that pre-exist before it was writing. Before there were people, we have rights that come, you say, from a creator, from a Catholic, but I would say they exist. We have natural rights, and we only have freedom of speech to the extent that we exercise it. The Constitution is a great hedge against certain types of encroachments, but it's a piece of paper. We have to live it, and we have to push for our rights every day.
Does everybody have natural rights, or is it just people born in the United States of America?
Everybody has natural rights. It's a great Enlightenment-era insight, and that more countries have variations on the tradition of liberal inquiry, and that is the source not just of an interesting and compelling and a free life, but also of prosperity. There's good evidence to show that if you look, try to pin one thing down, Matt Ridley has talked about this at great length. If you try to to what makes us prosperous. It is liberal inquiry. It is free speech.
What are these rights we call natural? I mean, and reduced to language that we can understand. What are they? Speech, press, association, travel, the things that are listed in the Bill of Rights?
Gotta say, Judge, I'm actually not a natural rights girl. I think it gets you in trouble when you start arguing from that perspective, because you need a God. You need someone to back them. But
let me ask you the same
liberty
question.
Liberty is great because it works.
Let me ask you the same question I put to Gillespie. If the First Amendment were repealed, would we still have freedom of speech?
Absolutely.
And where would it come from?
It doesn't have to come from anywhere, Judge. It just has to work. We have to look around and see what country has been the freest, the most prosperous, the most successful country in history. That country is the United States. We have a great list to work from.
So Gillespie,
I was going to say it's a flip, though, because it's, you know, if the, you know, we have the First Amendment and free speech is encroached on all the time. So it doesn't reside in the Constitution. It resides in our actions. I'm a libertarian existentialist. This stuff doesn't have to be written down. It has to be acted on.
Do those nuns that taught you years ago know that you've become an existentialist?
You know, they were, at the end, they were covering me in garlic and making me sit in the back of the church. You know?
Are there any natural rights that the government has not trampled?
Wow, that's a hard one to imagine.
Well, if these rights are guaranteed, let me back up.
They're not guaranteed. That's the point.
Oh, okay. Let me back up. The Constitution doesn't grant rights. The Constitution says these rights exist. Thou shalt not interfere with them, federal government. Right. And since the Civil War and the 14th Amendment, taught Civil War at another time, the states can't interfere with it. So the document is basically a negative one saying these rights exist. You can't interfere with them. It's hard to find a right. Speech, press, association, privacy, fairness from the government, sound money, that the government has not interfered with.
As a defensive document, which is a brilliant thing for it to be, it acknowledged that there is going to be relentless pressure from any state, from any government, and sometimes from an inflamed democratic citizenry to reduce those rights. And what the framers came up with, this is the way we're going to protect ourselves, even from ourselves.
If all of America but one person says that Bill O'Reilly should be silenced, and only Bill says he has the right to speak, would that majority be allowed to prevail?
It would not be the first time all of America was wrong.
Or told Bill O'Reilly.
Shut up.
To be quiet. But why not? If we have the majority rule in this country, are there certain areas immune from majority rule? And if so, what are they?
You know, it turns out when we let the Bill O'Reillys of the world and the Keith Obermans of the world do their talking, things turn out better.
So natural law, natural rights, is really a defense against the tyranny of the majority.
Absolutely.
Agreed?
No, absolutely.
You're not big on the natural law. You say our rights come from somewhere else. Would agree with that.
Sure. Use the rhetoric of rights if that's what holds off the tyranny of the majority.
Welsh, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Does no law mean no law? Or is there some exception there that I don't see?
There is constant exception, and it's
where
horrendous.
Do the exceptions come from?
The exceptions come from wanting to drive money out of politics through campaign finance restrictions. It comes from people who decide that you are going to be hurting the defense of the country or national security if you reveal this trade business secret. It is relentless, the hostility towards it. It comes against, you know, the FCC regulating things for no reason.
So somebody calls me up. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, the WikiLeaks case situation is a great example of the government wants to shut this guy down. Most, you know, a half dozen newspapers that Matt listed on Reason.com want to execute the guy. They're not going to be able to, because even if you get him, the architecture of free speech is out there and it cannot be contained. And that's what we need to understand and really kind of grok in a 60s, let it all hang out their way.
And participate in actively. Yeah. I mean, free speech is not a spectator sport.
The government likes to claim that when you come to the airport, you waive your constitutional rights. But you have the right to know that traveling, participating in modern society, is not grounds for the forfeiture of your constitutional rights. The Fourth Amendment guarantees the right to privacy. Thomas Jefferson, in the Declaration of Independence, called... Next. When it comes to what you earn, what right does the government have to your paycheck, according to libertarians? Our libertarian star, Nick Gillespie, Catherine Middleward, and Matt Welsh are clinging to their wallets, so you're at home at night. There's a knock at the door. You answer the door. You open the door. The guy with a gun says to you, give me your money. I want to give it away in your name. You think it's going to crap out some cool police. Find out. Is the police the collector? Is the government? What right, if any, does the government have to our earnings, Matt Welsh?
How are you going to pay for a government? Are you going to have a government? How is it going to get its money? That's the question. Is it all going to be through user fees? Are you going to have some withholding of taxes?
Well, before Abraham Lincoln's illegal and unconstitutional income tax, that's how the government survived. User fees, if you used a service, you paid for it, and sale of land. Never mind how the government got the land,
but
the tariffs as well. Tariff is a user fee using the port, and they sold land. Now, we couldn't finance the government as big as it is today with that. But so this brings us to another issue. Suppose we abolished the 17th Amendment. Suppose there were no IRS. Could we shrink the government down to its constitutional
Let's put it this way. That's not going to happen at time. The tax system may change, and it should change. It should be fairer. It should be less distorting. It should be more transparent. What we need to do, and we're at a point in the country because we're out of money,
right,
we have to figure out what are the basic things government should do, and then what's the best way to pay for that.
But what right does the government have to any of my money? I have frequently said on this air, Stossel hates when I say this, by the way, taxation is theft. Never mind why he hates it. I think he agrees with it, but doesn't want to say it. Isn't it theft? Isn't it the government claiming, I'll take as much as I want from your paycheck each week?
You know, I'll make up to you for my disagreement on natural rights. I think you're right, Judge. And, you know, mostly I think that it comes down to what is the list of things the government should be doing that the private sector or private individuals couldn't do better? And that list is really pretty
short. Well, but there is a list. So there's defense. There's, arguably courts, maybe some infrastructure projects. So defense, you're not gonna have a standing army. And even if you say, we should have loosely aggregated militias of private citizens, there's a cost involved. Should it be through an income tax? Should it be through a user fee? Should it be through something else? I mean, it's going
to
be something.
I don't want you to talk about economics. I want you to talk about morality and the Constitution. What is fair, if anything, for the government to take from us, Matt?
It is theft. I mean, it's important, I think, to look at it in terms of that, because that tells you that, I mean, it's only being collected because they have the guns. They will throw you in jail if you don't pay your taxes. And that important insight that we have to have.
The gun tells you to take a hike. And the bottom line is, we pay taxes because if we don't, they will come and take us away with guns.
Exactly. And that it's important for us to realize that instead of thinking it is some kind of benign system. No, if they didn't have the threat of force, we wouldn't be paying so much in taxes.
But they wouldn't be doing so much. Can I suggest, and this will make your blood pressure go up, and it's been dangerously low lately, I know.
You've been doing it for years.
Because I know that you're pro-life, but maybe taxes should be like abortion in Bill Clinton's America, safe, legal, and rare.
Actually, that doesn't raise my blood pressure because we're not going to talk about abortion. What tax rate between 0 and 100 is fair?
You know, there's no magic number, but I do think it's important to say cutting taxes now isn't going to shrink government. As much as I'd like to see that happen, you cut taxes, we just go into debt.
Is it hopeless, the size and scope of the federal government? I mean,
it's terrible. It's not hopeless. And the reason why it's not hopeless is that we are out of money. We're on the brink of serious fiscal disaster. Everyone says this. Ben Bernanke, everyone you disagree with says this, let alone the people you do agree with. That's going to force tough choices. One of them has to be, why do we have 100,000 people working in the Department of Agriculture? I mean, things have grown to such an absurd degree, they have to be cut.
Fantasize with me for a couple of minutes. Ron Paul gets elected president.
Turn the cameras off?
No. But Ron Paul gets elected to president, and half the Senate, more than half the Senate, and more than half the House of Representatives generally agrees with him. What would they do with the tax structure?
I think they would shave it down to close to zero. I mean, there'd be a flat tax, I think, is where people would go.
What's a flat tax?
A flat tax is just one rate that people pay. I suspect that there might be a sales tax or a rescission of all tax rates, and then we build back up. But this is the question. Can we cut government, the size and scope of government? I think Catherine's right. It's not about taxes, because if the government doesn't have the money, we don't starve the beast. They just double down and keep growing on their own.
Well, in this fantasy world of mine, there'd be no government printing presses. We'd have the gold standard. There'd be no Federal Reserve.
I would rather see something like a national sales tax or even a VAT tax, a value-added tax, because it's less distorting in terms of making basic economic distinctions.
Agreed.
And bizarrely, the only person on the national political scene, and believe me, I do not like this guy, Huckabee, ran on a consumption tax.
He's a sweetheart.
It is out there.
All right. Remember this famous proverb, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish. Libertarians want to depend on themselves. Liberals, like our president, want you to depend on the government. Take a listen.
If your premiums or your tuition is rising faster than you can afford, you're on your own. If the factory you've worked for 30 years closes its doors and sends your job overseas, tough luck. If you're a child born into poverty, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
This is a core difference between libertarians and the left, but which will win out as government entitlement programs only seem to be growing and growing and growing to our very self-sufficient group, Nick Gillespie, Catherine Mangu Ward, and Matt Welsh. Where did the idea come from, Nicholas, that the government would take care of you? I don't see it in the Constitution.
Yeah, I think it comes from a lot of specific individuals over the centuries, whether it's Karl Marx, who's actually got a small amount of guilt or responsibility in this, to people like Woodrow Wilson, to people like Franklin Roosevelt, to people like Ted Roosevelt, to people like Lyndon Johnson, to people like George W. Bush.
What did George W. Bush do?
He was a big proponent of growing the government and making people more dependent on it. He said that, you know what, seniors, even though you only spend 3% of your annual income on prescription drugs, we need to give them to you for free.
All right. Now, when libertarians, Matt, say things like Social Security is unconstitutional, Medicare is unconstitutional, Medicaid is unconstitutional, wealth transfers by the federal government, since they're not authorized by the Constitution, are unconstitutional. And then we are called soulless, immoral, selfish. How do you respond to that?
Well, I'm married to someone from Western Europe, France, to be precise. And we have these kind of debates all the time. And one thing
at the dinner table.
At the dinner table and elsewhere. One thing that you see, a huge difference between France and the United States, is that private charity, donations, people actually helping themselves or helping their fellow man is through the roof in the United States compared to everywhere in Western Europe, partly because we have a tradition of free market giving, free market attitudes about charity and even religion. You know, religion is much more flourishing in many ways in the United States because we have real freedom of religion here compared to most places.
And Catherine, when we were talking earlier about why some of us are libertarians, you talked about books that a lot of us read. And I suspect the four of us and a lot of people watching have read the same books. I remember I came home from college once and I left on my desk in my bedroom a book by Ayn Rand called The Virtue of Selfishness. And my Italian Catholic mother was going crazy over this. How could selfishness possibly be a virtue? Well, we since have discussed this many times. Is selfishness a virtue?
You know, I actually think I'm with Rand on that. And what it gets to is that libertarians aren't immoral. They have a different kind of morality. And it's no less deeply held, it's no less sincerely felt, and it has to do with the sovereignty of the individual. It has to do with letting people make their own choices and live with the consequences.
Let's
go back to the beginning here. It's, you know, the idea embedded in your questions are is that if the government doesn't do it, then nobody will. And as Matt was pointing out, we have enormous amounts of charitable giving precisely because the government doesn't have to do anything. The government isn't the best engine for wealth transfer. It's actually nonprofits.
Best anti-poverty program of the last two decades?
What?
It's the free market or an approach towards the free market in China. 200 million people at least have been lifted out of poverty because they've taken some steps towards a capitalist market system.
How did Lyndon Johnson sell us on the idea that we should expand Social Security into Medicare and Medicaid?
You know what? And I've been thinking a lot about this because we are at the end of the New Deal era of American politics. Lyndon Johnson lived through the Great Depression. He lived in a very different world, which was screwed up because it didn't have enough capitalism, not because it had too much. We're a richer, different country. We don't need those programs the same way we might have.
So would libertarians advocate no government at all? Wouldn't we descend into lawlessness? The answer's next. Are libertarians for limited government or for no government? To our group, big government critics all, Nick Gillespie, Catherine Mangu Ward, Matt Welsh, if you had to say in a nutshell, in one not overly long sentence,
you've already lost me, Chuck.
All right, what the legitimate moral role of government should be in a free society,
I think that the government should adjudicate claims between equal sovereign individuals. So it's, the government should be a framework that doesn't limit government, limit individual action, but it structures it in the least destructive way possible.
Catherine, what should government do today?
Not very much.
All right, but as a practical matter, I mean, I can make the argument government should protect freedom, it should protect me against force and against fraud. And it should provide the means to address those. So a court system, absolutely. Right. A defense department, of course, yeah, because somebody might want to use force on me. Police, we have to have them. Would you modify that? Preserve freedom, protect me from force and fraud.
Sure. I mean, I've come later to libertarianism than these fine folks here. So I don't mind a limited safety net for those less fortunate in the country.
Oh, but wait a minute. Would the safety net let you take money from Gillespie and give it to somebody that doesn't work in Matt Welch's world?
Yeah.
And where is that authorized in the Constitution?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, no. The modern government as we have now, there is a sense of what do you do with those less fortunate. And I think that it is perfectly acceptable to look for a way, hopefully using as much market mechanisms as you can to help people who...
What do you do with the less fortunate?
Here's the thing. I think that just to give your viewers kind of the other end of the libertarian spectrum, since we're doing our best at the table here.
Here we go.
That actually even some of the very small list that you gave, Judge, can be outsourced. I mean, we have private arbitration, we have NTOPS, we have insurance, provide government-like functions. Some might argue better than government. So I think even your very minimal list can be true.
One thing that the government should definitely do is define a BMI as skinny, should be about 30 or 35.
Toys out of Happy Meals. Okay, that's a core function.
Yeah. All right,
but this is, people like Milton Friedman, people like Friedrich Hayek believed in a minimal safety net for society. Yeah. So it's not off the reservation, but the fact is that all of those functions can be performed better by free individuals voluntarily associating with one another.
Should government protect private property? Should government protect the property of the airlines? Should government tell a lunch counter owner or a drugstore owner with whom the lunch counter or drugstore person can do business on his private property?
I mean, government should protect private property, sure. I mean, it shouldn't favor one person's private property over somebody else's, which is what happens inevitably in big government. I mean, eminent domain system as we have right now
Presume that the government actually does keep us safe, that when the government protects private property, it's doing a better job than the owner of the property would do?
In a lot of cases, I think the answer is no. You know, a guy with a shotgun can go a long way when the police are half an hour off.
But more importantly, about lunch counters. Let's talk about lunch counters and racial discrimination. You know, one of the problems in the days of segregation, it wasn't that businessmen were like, hey, I'm not going to serve black people no matter what. It was that the local government and local thugs and gangs of thugs said, hey, you cannot serve black people or we'll burn your business down. Or then we'll put you in court. Or then when, you know, a lynch mob comes, we'll turn the other way or we'll open the jail for you. I mean, that's the problem. The government should be an independent judge. It shouldn't be putting its thumb on the scale one way or the other.
Will government as we know it ever shrink to a point that is desirable to libertarians, or is this just a fanciful dream?
I can't imagine it happening. But we are on the cusp of something different, because we have to be. We are in a revolutionary moment right now, so it has to change in some direction.
Here, if I can
just
say,
have 15
very,
seconds.
Very quickly, don't focus on the government as much. The way we can make government relatively small is by growing the sphere of freedom enormously through technology and social innovation.
Catherine Mangu-Ward, Matt Welch, Nick Gillespie, thank you for joining us. Merry Christmas to you all.